Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the CougCenter.com podcast. My name is Jeff Neusser, one of the authors here at the site, and I'm here for a very special occasion. In fact, as you may have noticed, it takes a bit of a special occasion at this point to get us to drag out the podcast once again. Last week we had a cool interview with Mike Marlowe from the athletic department, and today, as you may or may not have heard, coming up on Wednesday is a fairly big deal in the world of college football. It is National Letter of Intent Signing Day, where hundreds or thousands, I don't even know how many it is, probably like, what, 2,500 kids, right? Something like that, 3,000 kids, pledging their allegiances, pledging the next 4 to 5 years of their life to a university, at least until they transfer. And so it is a fairly big deal. And in that spirit, we are going to have a little bit of a special conversation today. Joining me today for their podcast, their CougCenter.com podcast debuts, is Kyle Rancourt and Mark Sandritter. And guys, yeah, welcome to your first podcast. Kyle, how does it feel?
It feels fantastic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just fantastic. That's it. I mean, are your pants off? Is that the deal?
Well, I had to put them back on, so during the podcast, I can take them off.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And Mark, how about you? Are you sans pants, or are you with pants?
Fully pantsed. Totally. But still very totally excited. Pantsed.
Yes. You know, and we were joking before we got on the air, too, that like, this is the first time I've heard Mark's voice. It's the first time Mark has heard my voice. Now, Kyle and I have talked before, but Kyle and Mark have never talked before either. So I guess, like, this is kind of Mark's coming out party, so to speak.
It's a weird, menage a trois of podcast newness.
Yeah, you guys are breaking your podcast virginity.
There you go.
Never mind.
This conversation is going in a weird direction.
I thought about going there about, like, last time you were virgin, and then, that's a bad idea. Bad idea, school teacher. All right. Well, hey, let's talk what we really want to talk about, which is recruiting, which is, you know, obviously the big deal right now. So I guess where to start, guys, is I'm just kind of thinking, you know, people are pretty excited right now about this class, excited in the sense that, you know, we've obviously been excited since Mike Leach was hired, excited about what he brings to the program in terms of on-field prowess. But he's making some pretty big strides here off the field in terms of recruiting. He's turned over about 50%, probably even more than that at this point, of this class, added a whole bunch of guys on fairly short notice. We're looking at, you know, coming up basically on 2 months. Tell me a little bit about your general impressions. You know, Kyle, let's start with you since you're kind of our recruiting guru at Coug Center. And just kind of give me some, I don't know, initial impressions of this class, how excited you are. I know you're excited. So give me maybe like the degree of excitement at this point over the class that's probably going to be coming in here on Wednesday.
Well, I'm just excited that it's all going to come to a head finally. We can actually talk about guys that are going to be here instead of, well, we think they're going to be here, but maybe they'll change their commit at the last second. I'm pretty excited because now everybody gets to see how awesome I am with all the stuff I do instead of just randomly posting once a month. This next week is pretty much just me. So in all seriousness, though, I'm pretty excited about 4 or 5 guys. There's a lot of guys that could be okay down the line. I think it's a good first class for Leach. It's a lot better than Wolf's first class, but that's probably not a fair comparison. But overall, I'm pretty excited, yeah.
Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Kyle said, I'll be a lot happier once they're all signed and you don't get excited for Robert Lewis, and then all of a sudden Robert Lewis is thinking around or searching around and now he's back, you know? So even Allison, I'll be happier with Allison when he signs.
Yeah, it's you know, it's always that kind of a game. You get to the last couple of days and you're just sort of crossing your fingers that you don't have any major defections or anything like that. And the reality is we haven't, you know, really had much of that the last few years, presumably because, you know, we signed very few guys that anybody – I mean, no, that's not very nice. But you know what I mean? It's – you know, we weren't signing the highly sought-after type of recruit, which, you know, is – yeah, some people would say that's not necessarily a bad thing, just in the sense that, you know, Paul Wolf was identifying guys that fit for him and, you know, whatever. But, you know, I guess the last couple that I remember – defecting at the last second would be Max 40 and Asante Cleveland. That was, what, 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last couple I remember. And I guess, you know, I suppose maybe there's a little potential for that on Wednesday. Is there anybody that, you know, that you know, you guys think that and neither one of you can jump in here, you know, might be a candidate. Robert Lewis, you mentioned Robert Lewis, you know, maybe that's a guy that, you know, maybe waffles back the other way and changes his mind at the last second. Is there anybody else that you kind of see as maybe potentially being swayed at the very last second?
For me, I think Allison, I love the commit, but he was pretty close to committing to UCLA, and that's all the reports were saying. He's a heavy UCLA lean. So, I love that he verbally committed now, but I'll feel a lot more comfortable once he faxes in his letter of intent.
Yeah, and Kyle's talking about Jeremiah Allison, the outside linebacker from the Los Angeles area, committed tonight. We're recording this on Monday night. Committed tonight, according to the LA Times, said he was comfortable with the coaching staff and wanted to come up here. So, and we can talk about him as we get into this, but would seem to be a really excellent player. Mark, do you have anybody that you feel like is sort of on the fence or might be prime for last second defection?
You know, you have to wonder with some of just the quantity of receivers. If it comes out tomorrow that, you know, maybe they pick up another guy, maybe you see a guy like Alex Jackson, maybe look around, you know, you don't want to be the sixth receiver coming into class. I could see something happening there. You know, like Kyle said, Allison, I also read something the other day with him basically saying he would commit to Stanford if he got that offer. So if Stanford loses a, you know, DN outside linebacker tonight or tomorrow, you might see that happen. You never know when guys defect from the top schools and then they turn to their second options. That's when you really start to get worried.
Yeah, and it turned into sort of a domino effect. And especially if, you know, you were talking about the wide receivers, you know, a couple guys who are deciding either tomorrow being Tuesday, you're probably listening to this on Tuesday, so today, maybe later today, or Wednesday would be, you know, Cedric Dozier from Lakes High School up here in Washington, and then also Lawler. Is his name Robert? Robert Lawler?
Kenny Lawler.
Kenny Lawler. Yes, I was close. I was close. Robert is so close to Kenny. So Kenny Lawler also. So, and both guys, you know, scout top 300 players, top 100 wide receivers, four-star guys. You know, if they join the class, it might wouldn't, you know, be too much of a stretch to think maybe one or more of those other receivers might sort of get caught in a numbers game and decide that they'd rather go somewhere else and not be in a six-person wide receiver class. You know, speaking of this class and, you know, sort of the excitement as we go and – you know, we're all pretty fired up at this point. So maybe now's a good time to sort of launch into, you know, who's your favorite player so far that is committed, as you've looked through all the video and read up on these different guys. Maybe I'll start with you, Mark. Who's your favorite guy at this point in this class?
I think Kyle's mentioned this a couple times on the site, but I am absolutely in, camp Robert Lewis. I think, he fits perfectly in the inside slot and Leach's system. You know, those reports of him weighing 140 pounds might be a little scary, but over his career, I think that guy is, he's going to put up some big numbers. A lot of receivers are going to put up big numbers in this offense, but he's definitely going to get his share of targets in the next couple years.
The thing I find most interesting about Lewis is that he's a guy who played running back in high school. You look at his video, it's all running back. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously that's not necessarily a positive in the sense that he may not be as refined of a wide receiver, but at the same time, that does speak to his skill set, does it not, Kyle?
Yeah. And a lot of people were saying they'd be okay with gray-shirting him to put on some weight, but I honestly think that if he was holding up carrying the ball in high school, that I think he'll be okay in the slot in Leach's offense. He's as long as he doesn't do what Ricky Galvin did last year and try to prove how tough he is and run into tackles, I think that he should be okay.
Well, and it's obviously a little bit different too with running backs in the sense that, you know, and Brian and I were actually Brian Floyd, one of the other authors, if you're not familiar with our authors. Brian and I were having this conversation over chat last night about, you know, when you're a running back, it's, I mean, you have the ball and everybody is running at you. You know, when you're a wide receiver and you catch the ball, you know, everybody's out in patterns. The defense is kind of spread out. There's certainly much more of an opportunity to perhaps mitigate a hit or you know, not take such a direct hit and just get down. So, Kyle, who would you say is your favorite guy at this point?
Oh, hands down, my favorite player is Robert Barber. I mean, this guy is 5 stars. He's going to be amazing, and he's probably the best guy that I've ever evaluated.
Such a joker. You did see that there was some senior video on him that made its way to the site.
Yeah, I watched it, and it's not that much different. There was actually – it was spliced with his junior video because I saw a play that I thought I looked familiar, and I went back and watched, and it was part of the same tape. Yeah. So while my impression improves of him, I – still kind of have the same impression. But my favorite player in this class is Alex Jackson. Regardless of position, Alex Jackson, when I watched his highlight tape, I started doing the Ric Flair woos in my house, and my neighbors were really worried. But with the way that Mark feels about Robert Lewis, that's the way I feel about Alex Jackson. I just think the kid is going to be amazing. Plus, he came from Culver City, where Michael Bumpus came from, so obviously that means that he's going to be just as good as Michael Bumpus.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is another – for those of you who are not familiar, Alex Jackson, another wide receiver, a guy who's rated 3 stars by both Scout and Rivals but rated 4 stars by ESPN for whatever that's worth. They seem to do their evaluations in like July before their senior year and then just kind of stick with that. But you know, I was actually looking through some of the different profiles on ESPN and they were showing how I think the last time they updated their scholarship offers was like August 23rd, which I thought was fairly humorous. But another wide receiver, is there another sort of non-wide receiver prospect that has got you excited, Kyle? Maybe somebody on the defensive side of the ball?
I wasn't aware that we had anybody other than wide receivers.
We really do play defense.
Pretty sure we're bigger than 25 wide receivers. It's been pretty documented that I'm a big fan of Denzel Dotson, offensive lineman. But I guess if we're going defensive side, I really like Jeremiah Allison a lot. I think he's going to be that tweener guy, the outside linebacker, defensive rush end in the new 3-4. I also like I'm going to mispronounce his name, Keish Palacio.
Sure.
That we have like 10 guys whose names that I cannot pronounce. Mark and I were talking about this, and I'm just going to go ahead and leave most of them up to you.
Yes. But I will go ahead and try because there's really no way that I can butcher them worse than what Bob Robb and, you know, yeah.
Yeah. but go ahead. Jeremiah Allison and Keish Palacio, they're both kind of cut from the same cloth. A little undersized to play defensive end, but have really good quick bursts off the line. So when we were talking about a guy like Robert Barber not having that football knowledge yet, but he has the size, these two guys are the opposite. They have all of the skills to succeed at the next level. They just don't quite have the size yet. And once they get put into a conditioning program and eat the right foods and lift weights all the times and do this midnight mayhem thing or that Leach has all the kids doing, I think that they'll gain some weight and they'll be good to go.
Anybody catch your eye, Mark, on the defensive side of the ball?
I think one guy Kyle didn't mention is Khalil Petway, mostly just because he's huge. He's like 6'4", 6'5", I think I read. So, I mean, you figure he's already over 200 pounds. If he puts on some weight, which you'd expect, we could actually have a legitimately sized linebacker, which I don't know if we've seen that in a while, at least have three of them on the field at the same time. No Myron Beck converted from safety playing outside linebacker for us anymore. So that's an exciting possibility.
Yeah, and that's going to be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. And one thing for sort of listeners to keep in mind is this idea that you know, the 3-4 sort of necessitates different kinds of players. You're going to have, you know, perhaps kind of some bigger hybrid type outside linebackers versus your maybe smallish or smaller outside linebackers that we've grown a bit accustomed to over the last couple of years for the Cougars. And granted, some of that was out of necessity, but you know, I mean, we had guys like Lewis Bland and Myron Beck and you know different guys like that playing on that outside spot and more or less kind of getting demolished at times, but also being able to use their speed to sort of stick their nose into places. And, you know, it's pretty clear already that they're recruiting a different kind of guy. I do want to go back to Barber for just a sec, because I did look at that new video. I don't know how new it actually is, like you said, yeah. But one thing that actually – that I'm actually kind of curious about is everybody's just kind of assuming he's going to end up at nose tackle. I'm not convinced of that now after watching that. I'm looking at his body type and I'm looking at his frame and everybody's kind of looking at the 290 and saying, okay, this is a guy who's – oh, he's Samoan and he's 6'3 and he's 290 and, oh, he must be a tackle. And as I'm watching that video, I'm not completely convinced that they're not going to try and slim him up a little bit and put him at end, which, you know, for those of you who don't kind of know how a 3-4 typically sets up, your defensive ends in a 3-4 are typically a little bit bigger than your defensive ends in a 4-3. And so a guy like, for example, a guy like Travis Long is going to be a little lightish in terms of a 3-4 defensive end. And so I wonder if Barber might be targeting him more as a slim him down type project and let him, you know, use – because he did seem to have – I mean, the team that he was playing for in Samoa, you know, was lining him up on the edge, which, you know, some of that had to do with it looked like overmatched competition. But, you know, he did seem to have a reasonable first step. So I don't know, just something to think about anyway before we move on. You know, maybe we could do something really quick here is maybe we can go over some of the nuts and bolts of sort of the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours, what it's going to look like, sort of how this all works. You know, because we're looking here at some of the questions that the readers sent into Kyle and said, hey, can you talk about this or can you talk about that? You know, so maybe something that we can talk about first is things like, you know, if we go back before this, talk about things like official visits, unofficial visits. That was sent in by reader Jake here. You know, Kyle, maybe talk a little bit about what's the difference between the two, how that works, how you go on an official, how many officials do you get, you know, whatever you know about that sort of situation.
Sure. A high school player gets 5 official visits, and on an official visit, the school pays for everything. So they'll fly you out there. They get to host you. Your host is generally an upperclassman football player, and they can pay for your meals and stuff, and it's not a recruiting violation. An unofficial visit is when a player pays his own way just to go over, and it'll usually be on an official visit weekend, like the weekend 2 weekends ago when we had 10 or 11 guys come. We also had Sam Floor take his unofficial visit, so he wanted to go because he already committed, so he wanted to go visit with a bunch of the guys that were prospects. So he paid his own way to get over to Pullman, and he paid for everything himself. So the school can pay for everything on an official visit, and on an unofficial visit, the player themselves, they can take as many as they want. They just have to pay for everything out of their own pockets.
And so a guy, I believe, can take as many unofficials as he wants, right? I mean, he can show up as many times on campus as he feels like in terms of just showing up, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. As long as he's paying for stuff, then it's fine.
Okay. And then maybe let's, Mark, you and I talk a little bit about Wednesday and what that's like. So at what time can recruits start to fax in their letter of intent? What exactly is a letter of intent? How does that work? What does it mean? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, essentially a letter of intent basically locks them into receiving financial aid from the school. Their parents have to sign it. They sign it. They fax it in. The compliance department will go over it, you know, make sure everything, all the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed, and then the school will announce it. Most guys will do it early morning or afternoon. I think this year the earliest we're going to have is a 6 a.m. send-in, thanks to some central time there. But a lot of guys, 8, 9 in the morning when they first get to school, ceremonies sometimes noon. I think, as far as I know, the latest I've seen so far is 12:30. So, you know, most guys will get it done in the morning, afternoon, then go celebrate with their families.
Yeah, and I believe Lawler is the guy who's doing it a little bit later, right?
Lawler, I think, is doing it on the radio.
Okay.
Maybe 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, I don't know. I'm not sure on Lawler. But of the committed guys,
I think
the latest we have that I know of anyway is signing at 12:30.
Yeah. And when you start, by the way, just as an aside, when you start getting mixed in with the guys who are highly recruited, this is sort of the game you end up playing, is you get these guys who wait until the last day to decide, and then they, you know, wait until noon or 1 or 2 to have, you know, the ceremony at school. And, you know, it's just, yeah. It's part of the game at this point. One thing to note about the letter of intent is that it's a 1-year agreement. And so that's the thing that is sort of important for people to keep in mind, is that a scholarship is a year-to-year agreement. The school can essentially pull that agreement at any time they want for really any reason they want. Schools often won't do that, or they'll do a Sabin and move them on to a medical scholarship, which lets them keep their scholarship, but they can no longer play for the team anymore because ostensibly they're hurt. But some of the there's basically some number crunching going on. So if you've been hearing for some time that that the Cougars really only had room for, say, 18, 19, 20 guys, which is something we've written about on the site that Kyle's covered multiple times, is that, you know, we've only got room for 18, 19, 20 guys. Well, that's because the roster's sort of loaded with young guys who, you know, were part of this rebuild that Wolf did. Well, now you can only have 85 guys total. So how many they can actually bring in this class is a little bit up in the air. Nobody really knows exactly what the number is. Some of that may have to do with, you know, maybe they're counting on guys transferring. Maybe some of the guys who are still currently verbally committed really aren't, you know, and may not end up sending their letter in, you know, so who knows? So there will be sort of some juggling going on, you know, over the next, not even just the next 48 hours, but over the next like 2, 3, 4 months as they try to work out these numbers. You know, if this class ends up pushing, you know, 24, 25 kids, I would say there's probably a pretty good likelihood that at least some of them end up gray shirting, wouldn't you, Kyle?
Yeah. And I'm
and maybe explain gray shirt too as well.
Okay. A gray shirt is essentially what Ramel Dockery did this year. He was kind of forced to do it because of NCAA the clearinghouse issues and stuff. But you'll hear the term gray shirt a lot, and it's kind of like a red shirt. You a player from this class, if they were to gray shirt, so let's say Keith Ewing gray shirts this year, just using as an example. Not saying he's gray shirting, just using as an example. He would come in with the rest of his class, but he would delay enrollment until winter semester in January. And if he did that, the coaching staff could either count him towards this class or to 2013. And it kind of gives them a little bit of wiggle room. He can be on campus, and I believe he can actually take classes, but he has to pay for them himself. We'll put up a link to the ins and outs of gray shirting, but basically what it does is it delays enrollment and gives you some flexibility between classes. And it essentially gives them 6 years to play four. So they can gray shirt and then also take a red shirt, but usually that doesn't happen. So, and I don't know what they're going to do. We have 25 or 24 guys right now currently, and I would be pretty surprised if all 24 of these guys all made it in. I'm assuming they're speculating that at least one or two is going to jump ship at the last second. And I think probably three guys off the top of my head are prime candidates to gray shirt. So we'll see when signing day rolls around and Leach has his press conference and how they decide to play with the numbers and stuff.
Yeah, and this stuff tends to pop up sort of at the very last second too. I mean, a guy I remember is Max Gamma from last year's class, who was one of the earliest commits to last year's class. I think he was a second or third commit. And, oh, look at that, you know, he's second or third commit, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, he's going to gray shirt. It was like, wait a second, and then he disappeared. So, you know, it is kind of interesting sometimes how that kind of pops up at the last second. So, all right, so that's kind of recruiting day in a nutshell. So let's maybe talk about some of these guys who are going to be making up their minds in the next 24 to 48 hours. Let's the guy that's sort of first and foremost on people's minds at the moment is Cedric Dozier from Lakes High School in Lakewood, Tacoma area up here in Washington. He's kind of first and foremost on everybody's mind. First of all, because he's going to commit on Tuesday, so that's the first thing. And then second of all is the fact that more and more reports are coming out that he is now a WSU lean, which is sort of recruiting speak for he's leaning that direction. Nobody really knows these things, but it is kind of tantalizing that a guy like this is actually really sort of moving off of Cal. And obviously there were some fortuitous circumstances there, and maybe you guys can cover that in your answer, but moving off of Cal – Leach swoops in and at the very least has gotten this guy to seriously, seriously consider coming to Pullman. Mark, maybe talk a little bit about Dozier, what you see in him. I know that, you know, Washington was recruiting him as a corner, and that's why he kind of shuffled them off pretty, I don't want to say early in the process, but relatively early in the process, considering now he's just down to Cal and WSU recruiting him as a wide receiver. Maybe talk a little bit about what he brings to the table as a wide receiver as opposed to maybe a cornerback, and why it is that that Leach would be so high on this guy as a wide receiver.
Yeah, I haven't watched probably as much as Kyle has, but I mean, of the highlights I've seen, he just juke six guys out of their socks every single play. So I think you'll take that at any level. He's obviously, you know, he's a little smaller. If it's in the slot guy, he's probably not going to play outside, in Leach's system, but, you know, quick, shifty, mobile, you know, skilled. He probably doesn't have the experience at wide receiver similar to, Robert Lewis, but, you know, he projects very well there. He probably also projects at a lot of positions. He can probably play corner, safety, a lot of things, but, you know, he's just an athlete. And he's one of those guys when you'll hear in, you know, recruiting times of, oh, they'll make a spot for him. You know, it doesn't matter how many they've taken. He's one of those guys you keep a spot for regardless. He can commit after signing day. You fill a spot with a guy like Dozier.
So, Kyle, is this a situation where the guy can be a very good wide receiver or like an elite corner? Is that kind of what we're dealing with here, that people are saying, you know, he could be an elite corner or a very good wide receiver, but he just really wants to play receiver? Is that sort of what we're talking about?
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's projects as such a upper-tier wide receiver kind of translates into the fact that he would be an elite cornerback. He's got really good hands, so he would turn a lot of passes that our secondary would tip down into interceptions. Watching his video, he's got really good feet. That's really important with the cornerbacks, so you don't end up Benny Hill musicking Tyree Toomer spinning back and forth against Oregon.
Right.
Watching him, when I first watched him, I thought there was no way we were going to get him. So I was kind of just watching just because he's an amazing athlete, and honestly thought that he could be Trufant-esque in college. The guy is an amazing athlete. So just like Mark said, anywhere he could play running back and he'd be fine. I think it's not a problem, but his quote unquote problem is that he hasn't really played one position. He's played all over. He was playing quarterback this year for a little bit too, just because he's such a great athlete. I think once he gets in college and he sticks to one position, he'll be fine. I would rather have him at cornerback because we have better wide receivers and we have not very good cornerbacks, but if he commits as a wide receiver, I'll take it, and the pants are going to come off.
Still going to be incredibly excited. Let's talk maybe about some of these other guys who WSU has been rumored to be in on, who will be making their decisions as well. We referenced Kenny Lawler already, so maybe we'll just cover that pretty quickly. Kyle, any sense of, hey, is this guy really, like, I think I saw you know, kind of say that this would be a pretty mild surprise if he ended up coming to WSU, right?
Yeah, I've thought he's been an Oregon State lean for the most part for almost his entire recruitment, and he's been looking into Cal this past week or so, and it's pretty funny reading his parents' Twitter and his parents' Facebook. They have a sports managing consulting business, and they kind of want him to commit everywhere. So anytime that he says anything about a school, the fans will pipe up and say, oh, yeah, we'd love you here. And then his parents will say, oh, yeah, we'd love him there too. So then everybody thinks he has a new favorite every week. I love Kenny Lawler. He is a bigger wide receiver, so he's not the inside wide receiver that all the other guys are. He's more of a Marquise Wilson, Michael Crabtree type. He's 6'3", 185. And he's the guy that you would pair up opposite of Marquise Wilson and then just – four verts all day long. I think that we are in it, but if we get him, I'll be mildly surprised.
Mark, how about Alphonso Marsh? That's a guy I'm not real familiar with. Talk a little bit about him and where he potentially ends up if WSU is really a serious player there.
Marsh is he's one of those Pete Carroll type cornerbacks. Basically, he's huge. He's 6'3", I think. You know, Carroll likes Brandon Browner and Richard Sherman, those big corners they took over for the NFL, at least for Seattle. But, so Marsh is a big corner, something WSU hasn't had in a long time. I'm trying to think. I can't remember a guy 6'2", 6'3", playing corner at WSU in a while. But everything I've read, at least on Marsh, is that he's either already made up his mind as going to Utah, or he is a heavy Utah lean. I saw on Twitter a couple days ago his top three was, I think, Cal, Utah, and us. So at least you made the top three, but I don't think you have that 33% chance. I would be surprised if Marsh did not end up at Utah.
And what about Raymond Ford? That seems to be sort of the other guy that WSU has been linked to, but he's kind of all but in Lincoln, Nebraska, right, Kyle?
Yeah. It's funny because he took his visit to Lincoln 3 weeks ago, and as soon as he got back, he said, "I know where I'm going to school," which doesn't really take a rocket scientist to figure out why. I don't know why you would say that if it was another school. And then he took his visit to Utah and loved it, and then he took a visit to WSU and loved it. And it's funny when people report a recruit loves a visit. It's like, oh, really? They told you you're awesome the entire time and gave you free stuff. It's shocking that he would enjoy his official visit. But I'd be surprised if he didn't end up at Nebraska. I don't think that we are as high on his list as some people think. I think he said he had a good time during his visit, and people kind of took that and ran with it. But
no.
Yeah.
No way.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know. So, all right. So, yeah, if any of those guys decided to send in their letters on Wednesday, it would be considered somewhat surprising. Okay. So let's get into maybe some of these other questions that the readers sent in, which is kind of cool. Since we were talking about Marsh and Ford and those guys are defensive backs, this next question would seem to sort of fit in naturally. This class seems notably devoid of secondary talent, and given the aforementioned state of our secondary and the sort of the I don't know if clown show is too strong or not, but that sometimes – I know. I'm kind of mean sometimes. I'm trying not to be mean. But I think we all can agree that we had some coverage issues at times last year. And so that there doesn't seem to be any – secondary guys in this class, or at least very few. One guy is David Buchanan, whose last name is going to sound familiar. His brother happens to be our starting free safety. So that should sound about right. But, you know, really nobody else. Is this a sign of that they're okay with these guys, or that maybe they're targeting guys already on the roster and converting them? I know Leach would sort of recruit guys and then sort of sort it out later when he was at Texas Tech. Kyle, what's sort of your personal take on the state of recruitment in the secondary right now?
I think he just saw how bad it was and said, "Ah, forget it. I'm just going to worry about offense. Let's recruit 150 wide receivers and not worry about playing defense." I think you said it earlier. He's going to recruit a bunch of athletes, and he's going to play the best players. And if players want to get on the field, then we'll try him out at defensive back. And I think he sort of has, in his career, he's taken the approach, we'll see how it goes, kind of play it by ear. And it's a little frustrating because it's hard to project, and it's hard to look down the line and say, okay, we're okay at safety, we need cornerbacks, or vice versa, because he'll just bring in a whole bunch of people, kind of just let things shake out. And it's frustrating as a journalist, as a blogger, trying to write about all this stuff when we don't know it all.
Right. Now, don't sell yourself short. You're a journalist. even though you don't have journalism degrees like Mark and I, but that's okay.
Yeah, we'll let you slide.
We'll let you slide. You're one of us. You've earned your stripes. Mark, how about what's your take on the situation? Are there any guys that you already see on the roster who would seem sort of as prime, obvious candidates to make that move to defense?
Offensively, you know, there's at least a decent number of receivers, so you could see, I don't know if guys like Myers or Edie's pretty small, so I don't know if Myers or, you know, maybe Bomber, maybe played some defense, but I think mostly you're just hoping that at least at corner you're young. You may not have been good last year, but you're still pretty young at that position when you figure, I think Simmons is going to be a senior, Nolan Washington and DeMonte Horton will be juniors, and then Tracy Clark, Brandon Golden, Spencer Wasim, those guys will all be, you know, freshmen, sophomores. So at least you think they would develop. I guess that's what you're banking on at this point in time, is Clark or Golden or Wasim stepping up. And then, you know, DeMonte will probably pick off, like, I don't know, what, 90 interceptions next year, you guys think? So
I think so.
We should be, you know, we should lead the country in that. He's going to probably win whatever cornerback award there is.
Oh God. I love little snarky inside Kook Center jokes. They're just so wonderful. I think you hit the nail on the head there. One guy I would say that I still, and I don't know, Kyle, how you feel about this, but it seems to me that Ramel Dockery is still sort of a prime candidate for eventually making that move. And I don't know if it's just because I saw him play corner in high school and I felt like he was a better corner than wide receiver. I'm not sure if that's it, because he really does. I mean, he's not and I don't want people to take this comparison and run with it. But in a lot of ways, he reminds me of a guy like Nate Robinson. Nate Robinson was so strong. That was a little different. But in terms of just outright athleticism, the ability to leap, the ability to sort of turn and run. And I mean, you know, there is some precedent for, you know, and again, this is maybe not the best comparison in the world, but, you know, a guy like Tyrann Mathieu out at LSU, you know, he's what, 5'7", 5'8", right? And, you know, considered one of the best kind of cover corners in the country this year, was a Heisman finalist. So, you know, I don't know, Kyle, do you think I'm way off base in the sense that, you know, that really could still be a possibility at this point?
No, I actually, we talked about it last year around signing day. I thought he was better suited for a cornerback and I thought he would wind up at cornerback. I think there may have been a little bit of Wolf told him he could play wide receiver, and that's part of the reason we got him instead of Oregon State. But I think at the very least, they at least try him out in the secondary and see how it goes, and maybe they let him play both ways. I think that's a possibility for a lot of these guys. So if we get Dozier, I think that they'll say you can play wide receiver, but we also want you to at least play nickelback or something, or, you know, try to play both ways a little bit, because we are so bad in the secondary.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, and it's, again, we're not trying to like bomb on people. I mean, that's, I hope people don't take that the wrong way. It's just we're trying to be honest in our assessment of where, you know, where this program is and what it is that they need and where they're currently struggling. And so that comes from, so when we say like we're not good, we're not trying to be mean. We're just trying to say, hey, this is where we're at. But, you know, I think Mark does make a good point that, you know, experience could potentially make a big difference for these guys where, you know, being young and everybody in the secondary being young pretty much at the same time outside of Toomer, is, you know, creates some issues. As I look at some of these other questions, you know, there are kind of some interesting ones about the recruiting process itself and guys talking, you know, asking questions about, you know, kind of if you were the recruit, what would you look for? What would be important for you? If you had a kid who was being looked at by, say, these different schools, you know, what would you tell them? You know, and maybe we can just sort of take a larger view of it to maybe try and get an inside view of how the recruiting process works. I think that a lot of fans are sort of mystified by what makes a teenager's what caused a teenager to make a decision. And maybe I'll throw it open to you guys to start with, and then I'll chime in with my own experience, given that I have spent the last 9 years spending 6 hours a day around teenagers and have maybe just a tiny bit of insight into their brains, which isn't much because they are teenagers after all. But, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the various factors. Mark, let's start with you. Talk about the various factors that seem to play into a recruit's decision and just kind of how each guy is different.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of these guys, a lot depends on the level of recruit you are. If you're, you know, one of the guys who, the top-end guys who likely has a good shot to play in the NFL, you're looking for a coach who can develop you a program, you know, that continually sends guys at your position to the NFL, all those kind of things, you know, playing big time bowl games, the exposure, everything you'll need to go to the league. Whereas, you know, as you start to go down the ladder and then you're just a guy who's playing college football on scholarship, you're looking a lot at, you know, what kind of degree you're going to get, the major you want, does the school offer it, you know, those along those lines. So a lot depends on the caliber of the recruit, but, you know, they look at everything from facilities to coaching staffs to history to, you know, uniforms are a big deal. There's a lot of factors that play in nowadays.
Yeah. What about you, Kyle? What do you see as far as, you know, the most influential things for recruits?
Yeah, I think it's funny that Mark mentioned uniforms, because I was going to say it's a lot of the stuff that we would think is kind of silly. I know that guys just like the feel of the campus sometimes, and there's no way to describe it. They're just, well, I just like the campus. It doesn't matter. I'll figure out my major later. I'll figure out the depth chart later. I just like the feel of the campus, or I think these uniforms look awesome. And I know last year everybody ragged on Maryland for having just god-awful looking uniforms. But there was a couple of guys that committed because they said they liked how crazy they were with the uniforms. And hey, to each his own, I guess. But I think there's a lot of stuff. I mean, having nice looking co-eds certainly helps. I know Greek row and sundresses and all that stuff plays a factor, but I think everybody has to remember, for the males listening to this, remember being 17 years old and remember what your priorities were. Like, I couldn't decide what I wanted to have for lunch, let alone decide where I want to spend the next 5 years of my life. So I think when people get up in arms on Twitter or on message boards or whatever, and they say, how could this guy pick that school? How could he pick this school? He's stupid for not choosing this school. Guys are going to pick where they want to go based on a number of factors. You may think some of them are stupid or silly or whatever, but that's life.
Yeah, and it's – so I'll go ahead and throw my two cents in, which is you will drive yourself batty if you try to figure out what teenagers are thinking. And I get paid to make a living out of trying to figure out what teenagers are thinking. And I've been doing it for going on a decade now, and I still don't have the faintest clue half the time what's going through their brains, because they're just, you know, 17-year-old testosterone-filled teenagers who, you know, some of them have a great head on their shoulders and some of them don't, and some of them have a great head on their shoulder and some of them still do, you know, crazy things that don't make a lot of sense to anybody. And, you know, when you think about it, yeah, it's like, you know, why would you pick based on uniforms? That seems like the dumbest reason ever to decide where you're going to spend 4 years in college. But the reality is, you know, regular undergrads pick colleges for that for dumb reasons all the time. You know, it's I remember when I went to WSU the first time, which was early in my senior year, I was taken on a quasi recruiting trip by my journalism teacher. You know, I remember the thing that stuck with me was simply we were driving down Stadium Way. And it's the first time I'd ever been to Pullman, and, you know, I grew up a lifelong Husky fan and went to, you know, season tickets, the whole nine yards, and was driving down Stadium Way. And then all of a sudden I looked over and there's Martin Stadium. And I turned to my teacher who was driving and said, "Wait, is that the football stadium?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "That's really cool." He's like, "What?" I'm like, "It's right in the middle of campus," you know, because the Husky Stadium's all the way out on the very edge by the lake. And I don't know, there was just something about it. It's like the campus is built around the football stadium, which isn't entirely true, but that's kind of what it looked like, you know. And so and that stuck with me, which why would that stick with you? So for me, it was, you know, the community thing in Pullman, this idea that it was a college town. And so, you know, it's – and I think that's just part of the recruiting process too, is understanding, you know, the coach's job is to figure out what each kid desires and try to figure out how to get that kid to see that thing in your school. And I think it's part of why actually Mike Leach seems to really like the recruiting process, where a lot of coaches don't. He kind of likes this challenge of figuring out what each kid is sort of, you know, what each kid is sort of, you know, what makes them tick, you know, what makes them think that WSU would be an attractive place. It maybe that's something we could talk about really quick. You know, so if you're Mike Leach, you know, what Paul Wolf was sort of famous for, the selling the college town thing. That was his thing. And if you read any interviews with him, it was, "Come to Pullman. It's the only college town in the Pac-10 or Pac-12. Mark, what do you think is sort of, do you think Mike Leach is still pushing that point, or what do you feel like are sort of his biggest selling points going forward as he's sitting in the living room of potential recruits?
It seems like, at least from what I've read of guys who visited since Leach took over, you hear a lot more about their opinions on Leach. So I think at least initially right now, he's selling more of himself, you know, his history of success, you know, what, graduation rates and bowl games. So that's a pretty good selling point to any kid who wants to go to school. They want to go to bowl games and they want to get a degree. And, you know, Mike Leach has a proven record of doing that. I'm sure they still talk, you know, Pullman and the WSU family and all that kind of stuff. But I think right now his biggest selling point is basically himself.
Kyle, how much do you think the new facilities are playing into this and the plans for the new facilities?
Well, I don't think they're playing at all. I think it's just Pirates. That's the only thing he's talking about is Pirates. That's it. It's 100% Pirates all the time. Yeah. No, I think showing them some updated blueprints for, or drawings for the the new stadium and where the new facilities will be, and it'll be football only. That's we're going to have some state-of-the-art facilities, and that's one of Oregon's big, big selling points is they have fantastic facilities. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden we're going to have facilities that are as good as Oregon's, but we can now say that we have state-of-the-art facilities, and that's a big thing for kids. Some kids don't really care. Some kids are fine with a crappy workout room and running stadium steps, but it's a really big – really big draw to a lot of kids. So I think Sandling, not only himself, like Mark said, but that WSU is on the rise, not only on the field, but off the field. And that's, he can show how many people have donated since he was hired. And they're like, if they're on board for 2 months after I've been hired, think what's going to happen when we win 10 games 1 year. So I think he's sort of buying or having them buy into the get here first so we can build this. And not just be another spoke on the wheel.
Right. And the reality is, I mean, pretty much every new coach can play on that. I mean, Paul Wolf did that, you know, with not necessarily with his very first class because he had, you know, weeks to put that thing together with only three verbals when he started. But, you know, it's his second recruiting class, his first real full 12-month recruiting class, you know, he had an opportunity to tell guys, hey, let's build this thing. And that's when he landed guys like Jeff Toole and Marquise Wilson. I guess Marquise Wilson was the next year. But, you know, that sort of thing, he was able to say that. And then after, you know, so much losing, that starts to wear thin. Well, now you've got Mike Leach. Not only has he energized the fan base, but it seems that he's done that with recruits as well. You know, he's sort of among fans, among recruits, he's sort of this, you know, untainted saint, I guess. You know, I don't really know any other way to put it in that, you know, he hasn't lost a game yet. He hasn't, you know, gone for it on fourth and one from his own 25 and not gotten it and had it turned into a touchdown the other way. You know, he hasn't done these things that, you know, I mean, as excited as we all are, it's not like he was winning, you know, 12 games a year at Texas Tech. I mean, he wasn't perfect. Nobody's perfect. And so, you know, but he sort of has this aura around him that's generating excitement because he is, so far, he hasn't lost a game. And I think that is really playing into it. And then also the fact that, you know, he already had a lot of verbals and was able to sort of pick and choose which guys he wanted to keep, I think was really beneficial. I think it's maybe time we wrap this up a little bit. Maybe we'll sort of wrap it up with this. The term, we sort of had a fun debate on the site the other day about the term sleeper, about guys who, you know, what exactly is a sleeper? What does that actually mean? You know, and maybe we can just finish with this. You know, as you look up and down this class, you know, who is the guy that you just sort of have a good feeling about? I know it's tough to you know, I know it's tough to project these guys out. And you know, I mean, for example, I'll go ahead and mea culpa on this one. I thought Robert Giles was like the very best receiver in that class 2 years ago. And I thought Marquise Wilson was meh, he's okay. He wins a lot of jump balls in the end zone. Just doesn't look very polished to me. Yeah, I look really stupid. And so, you know, I believe me, that's when I decided I need somebody like Kyle to come in here and handle all this crap, because I'm like, I have no idea what I'm talking about. But, you know, given all those caveats, you know, are there a couple guys, maybe one from each of you, a guy that has caught your eye that for whatever reason you're just like, you know what, he's not getting a lot of pub, but this is a guy who I legitimately think might just blow up into something huge. Mark, let's start with you.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be something huge. Like, I don't think he's going to be, you know, freshman All-American Marquise Wilson. But I think one guy who I like quite a bit is Brett Bartoloni. Same from the Harbor, same school as Cody Clements. One reason, he's flown pretty much under the radar with all these other receivers coming. I think Alex Jackson committed first, then he did. But then since he has, you have, you know, Marks came in, Lewis came in, now possibly Lawler and Dozier. There's a lot of guys who are, you know, more public, higher rated. But Bartoloni, he impressed me quite a bit with what I saw. And, you know, if you look up and down Leach's wide receiver history, which I've studied a little bit, just a little, there's a lot of guys like Bartoloni who have succeeded. You know, they didn't start out, you know, maybe as forces. A lot of Leach receivers do not have freshman years. So that's going to be interesting, because even guys like, you know, Crabtree redshirted, Danny Amendola had like 18 targets as a freshman. A lot of those guys don't do a lot as their freshman sophomore years, but then in Leach's system, they really come on their junior and senior years, which also, side note, gives you a lot of hope for Gino Simone. If you look at, I think he's coaching at TCU now. Trey Haverty, He was basically Simone his first 3 years at Texas Tech. He had like maybe 20 catches total. And then his last year, he went for like 77 catches and 1,000 yards. So, you know, a guy like Bartolone can sit in the system, redshirt most likely, then start out, you know, 20 targets, 40 targets. But by the end of his senior year, I think he's going to be a consistent guy in the slot, starter, a maybe not an all Pac-10 kind of or all Pac-12 kind of guy, but, you know, a guy who's very instrumental to the success of the offense.
Kyle, how about you? Is it a guy like Dotson or is it maybe somebody else?
Well, I think using Dotson would probably be unfair since I've talked about him so much. But I'm going to stick on the offensive line and go with Sam Flohr. And I think Sam Flohr gets overlooked a little bit because he's playing left tackle. And he doesn't quite project as well as a left tackle. I think he projects more as a right tackle. And same with Mark. I don't think that this is, oh my gosh, he's going to blow up and be amazing. But I think he can be sort of like a Kenny Alfred type of a player for his career where he doesn't really get talked about as much until he leaves. And we're like, oh, we should have talked about him more because he was really solid for 4 years. I think he's probably going to redshirt, hit the weights a little bit, but I think he's a legit 3-year starter. So I really like him and Dotson together. That's why I was so excited when they committed back to back, because I think both of them can anchor the offensive line for a couple of years to come, especially with these wide splits. And I'm pretty high in him. And a side note on Bartolione, I didn't know it. That's how you pronounce it. I was always thinking it was like Toblerone. So I was
I'm
like,
just taking wild guesses here. So.
Okay, I thought it was Bartolone. So I guess whatever.
The key to successful podcasting is sounding like you know what you're talking about.
Just be
confident in the pronunciation, and it's all good. So, yeah. All right. Well, hey, that was fun. That was
very much.
Maybe we should do this again after Wednesday. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm good with that. Then we can actually talk about guys that are actually here instead of talking about guys that are not.
Yeah.
You know, we get rid of the anxiety of, oh, man, is Jeremiah Allison going to commit to UCLA tomorrow?
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, let's plan on doing that. Well, guys, it's been fun. On behalf of my fellow authors here, Mark and Kyle, I am Jeff. Thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you here in a couple of days. Thanks.